Before we get started, I'm actually going to have you take a seat, because this story that we have for today, this gospel story that we are going to hear, is what's often called the parable of the prodigal son, story of the prodigal son, right? And this is a story that has been interpreted in so many ways before, but I have to tell you, it was a particular delight this week in looking at it through the lens of the Sabbath. We've been talking about Sabbath these last couple weeks, and it's maybe a lens through which we don't often look at a story like this. So we've been talking these last couple weeks about Sabbath, about rhythms of rest and renewal embedded in creation in the first chapter of Genesis. Sabbath is so significant that it was included in the Ten Commandments as something that God's people were to remember and to keep set apart. And I think when we view this story that Jesus tells through the lens of the Sabbath, the prodigal son is a story of what happens when those rhythms of work and rest are ruptured, when they're fractured, when they're broken apart. So this is the third story in a row that Jesus is telling a wide swath of Israel's population. Chapter 15 starts out, now all the tax collectors and sinners were coming near to listen. The religious leaders were grumbling and saying, "This fellow welcomes sinners and eats with them." And Jesus' response is to tell them three stories that connect together to show something about God. And because they are stories, it allows us to use our holy imaginations to fill in the blank spaces of some of the stories. Because I don't know about you, when we have these parables that come up, I always leave these stories with more questions than I do answers. And so it allows us space to wonder about motivations or the impacts of actions on those around it. So as we read through this, I'd invite you to wonder with me at some of what is not spoken as Jesus tells them the story. As we move through this story, I wonder what assumptions we make about the people in the story. I wonder who we tend to give the benefit of the doubt. I wonder how we envision the dance of these relationships being impacted by the attitudes and actions of one another. And I think as we go through that, using some holy imagination, we can see a new way through that can help us see the Sabbath in a wonderful, wonderful way. So we'll read through a little bit at a time. We'll stop. We'll reorient ourselves in the story. We'll take a look at some of these questions. So this is a story from the Holy Gospel according to Luke, the 15th chapter. Glory to you, O Lord. Begins with verse 11. He says, "Then Jesus said, there was a man who had two sons." All right, I want to stop there first. I want us to use our holy imaginations a bit. I wonder what their life is like. A man who had two sons. What are the rhythms like of this man and his two sons? What's their life like? What are the rhythms of work and rest they may have had? In the beginning, we can imagine them as a unit. Right? There was a man who had two sons. We can imagine them as a kind of functioning team, doing what they can to live well together. But then there's a break. Right? There's this fracture that disrupts each of their lives in different ways. So I wonder what would happen if we looked at each of the brothers and their responses to this break through the lens of Sabbath. Because I think what we'll see is they represent the two kind of extremes of work and rest, polar opposites of a rhythm of work and rest laid out in creation and commandments. If we remember in creation, in Genesis 1, the rhythm is laid out 6 days of work and a seventh of Sabbath, of rest. we remember when the commandments were given to God's people, the fourth commandment was to remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy. And in Deuteronomy, when this is given, it's tied to their freedom from slavery in Egypt. Remember, you are no longer slaves in Egypt. Therefore, you are to remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy. And so using those as the foundations, we move forward. There was a man who had two sons. The younger of them said to his father, "Father, give me the share of the property that will belong to me." This is the break. So he divided his property between them. A few days later, the son gathered all he had and traveled to a distant country, and there he squandered his property in dissolute living. When he had spent everything, a severe famine took place throughout that country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to one of the citizens of that country, who sent him to his fields to feed the pigs. So the younger son takes one extreme, right? The rhythm of his days is whatever he wants them to be. You think a 3-day weekend for Labor Day is great? Try a 7-day weekend, right? Whatever he wanted to do, he did it. But then he reaches the end and he sees the emptiness. The only work he can find is feeding pigs, a particularly low position, especially considering the crowds to whom Jesus is telling this story. Right? This is a particularly low position for the Jewish crowds listening, given the uncleanliness of pigs in all of the laws and codes that would guide their faith. Jesus continues. He says, "This younger son would have gladly filled himself with the pods that the pigs were eating, and no one gave him anything. But when he came to himself, he said, 'How many of my father's hired hands have bread enough and to spare? But here I am dying of hunger. I will get up and go to my father, and I will say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me like one of your hired hands.' So he set off and went to his father. But while he was still far off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion. He ran and put his arms around him and kissed him." And I'd just like to point out that the compassion and the embrace of the son, the compassion of the father and embrace of the son, comes before the son has a chance to give him the speech and apologize. That's going to be important for us later on. Then the son says to him, "Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son." But the father said to his slaves, "Quickly bring out a robe, the best one, and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet, and get the fatted calf and kill it. Let us eat and celebrate, for this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found." And they began to celebrate. That's one extreme of Sabbath keeping, right? All Sabbath, all the time. I've never heard of anyone taking every day off using the excuse of Sabbath, but it's a conversation I'd love to have because I think it'd be kind of funny. Right? All Sabbath, all the time. The younger son really sees how empty that life is. Cut off from relationship. Cut off from the things that give him meaning. So if that's one extreme, now we see the other extreme. Right? Now the elder son was in the field. When he came and approached the house, he heard music and dancing. He called one of the slaves and asked what was going on. The slave replied, "Your brother has come home, and your father has killed the fatted calf because he has got him back safe and sound." He became angry, and he refused to go in. father came out and began to plead with him. But he answered his father, "Listen, for all these years I have been working like a slave for you. Remember, you are no longer slaves in Egypt. Therefore, remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy. I have been working like a slave for you," the older brother says, "and I have never disobeyed your command. Yet you have never given me even a young goat so that I might celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours comes back," not my brother, "when this son of yours comes back, who has devoured your property with prostitutes, you kill the fatted calf for him." You can hear the resentment just oozing out of his words, right? And where does he start with the statement? What's first on his litany that he gets out to his father? How much he works. The older son is the other extreme, right? He works 24/7 thinking it will earn him more favor and higher status. This is the way of blessing, he thinks. The more I accomplish, the harder I work, the more things I cross off my to-do list, the more favor I will have. I can't afford to take a rest. There's always too much to do. Sound familiar? If the younger son's life of 24/7 rest led him to emptiness, the older son's life of 24/7 work leads him only to anger and resentment. My friends, neither of these things is what God desires for us. That's why he gave the Sabbath command to all of creation. We hear the Sabbath enacted in Genesis 1 in creation when God rests. We hear it commanded to us as a way of remembering we are no longer slaves in Egypt when the commandments are given to God's people. In our reading from Deuteronomy today, there's a year of Jubilee, a year of universal debt forgiveness every 7 years to prevent the accumulation of wealth at the expense of our neighbor, because God kind of knows how our brains work. God knows our propensity to be a bit older brother-ish. And so one of the things that God does, God knows that we have that older brother mentality inside of us, particularly those of us in the West, particularly in the modern day United States. God knows that we have this temptation to accumulate living within us. He knows that we often live by the false gospel that says the one with the most toys wins. The one with the highest number in the bank account is the one that God loves the most, but this is not true. And it's the words that the Father speaks at the end which brings this all together. The Father said to him, "Son, you are always with me, and all that is mine is yours. But we had to celebrate and rejoice." Father knows this is about more than accumulation. This is about more than wealth. This is about life and death. We had to celebrate and rejoice, he says, because this brother of yours was dead and has come to life. He was lost and has been found. This is the gospel of the Lord. Praise to you, O Christ. We don't have to do the call and response again, but this truly is the gospel of the Lord, right? In our spiritual lives of practicing Sabbath, there are times when we fail, even when it's just a moment of two or two when we're trying to practice Sabbath. Our minds wander. We start making grocery lists. We start thinking of the emails we need to send, right? but it's a practice to which we must return to as individuals and as a community, that we must turn and return to. And what the reading from Deuteronomy teaches us is that that individual practice of Sabbath also has communal ramifications. This is what the parable of the prodigal son teaches us too, right? Our ability or inability to practice those rhythms of rest and Sabbath have implications beyond just ourselves. They impact the ways we relate to one another. And yet this Sabbath is a call that we must, as individuals and as a community, turn and return to. And when we do so, we will always be greeted with compassion. Love the Father's response. Even though the Son is still far off, Father runs to him and embraces him with compassion. When we turn and return to realize that the pace at which we are living is not sustainable, we'll always be greeted with compassion by the God and Father of all, who celebrates and rejoices every time one who is lost is found again. It's those personal practices that have repercussions within the community. Just like both sons' actions had consequences that went beyond themselves. Right? The practice of Sabbath keeping, even if it is just for moments at a time, help us stay oriented toward God and toward our neighbor. It helps us remember that what we have been given to steward is not ours to pile up, but only to share. Remembering the Sabbath helps us remember our place in the order of creation. It helps us to remember the rhythms of work and rest that allow us to be open and generous with God, and open and generous with those around us. And for that, we can indeed say thanks be to God.